good number present this evening. We appreciate the presence of everyone. Hope that you've got your Bible with you, and I encourage you to get it and turn to the 39th chapter, if you will, of the book of Genesis. And as you're turning there, remind you that we have two lessons remaining for our studies. Tomorrow morning, we'll continue and finish our studies on Matthew 18 on relationships. And tomorrow, we'll begin at verse 21 and continue through the end of the chapter, and we'll be talking about forgiveness. So come and be a part of that study in the morning if you can. And then tomorrow evening, we'll conclude our studies by talking about Luke, the 15th chapter, and focus on the wayward son came home. And our question is, what brought him back home? And we'll be talking about that on tomorrow evening's study. Come back and be with us then if you can. Well, in Genesis chapter 37 and in verse 1, we are introduced to Joseph as the favored son of Jacob. In fact, he was favored and therefore he was envied by his brothers. The text tells us his brothers envied him, verse 11. They wanted to kill him, according to verse 18. But finally, about verse 28, we notice that his brothers sold him to the Midianite traders, as you'll recall. The Midianites then brought him and sold him to Potiphar in Egypt, according to verse 36. He rose in power, and he brought blessings to the household of Potiphar. So I want us to read verses 1 through 6 as kind of an introduction for the rest of the study and see what took place when he finally gets to Potiphar's household. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him, and he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put in his hand. And so it was that from time to time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except the bread that he ate, and Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Well, that serves kind of as an introduction that Joseph is now in the household of Potiphar, and he rose in power, and he brought blessing to the household of Pharaoh. Now, beginning at verse 7, actually to the end of the chapter, not just stopping at verse 18, but Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him. And that's the focal point of our study tonight. We want to talk about the seduction of Joseph. And I want us to notice verses 7 to verse 23. So let's read the rest of the chapter together. If you don't already have your Bible open, I encourage you to turn to Genesis 39. We're going to begin at verse 7. Go to the end of the chapter. And let's focus on the text, and we're going to keep our Bibles open there because we'll take our study from Genesis chapter 39. Beginning at verse 7. It came to pass after these things that the master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has into my hand. There is no one greater in the house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And so it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, that none of the men of the house was inside. And she called him by the garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand, and he fled, and he ran outside. And so it was that when she saw he left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of the house and spoke to them, saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. And he came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened that when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me, and he fled, and he went outside. And so she kept the garment with her until the master came, and she spoke to him with words like these, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought to us to come into me has come into me to mock me. And so it happened, as I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me, and he ran outside. And so it was that when the master heard the words of his wife speaking to him, saying, "Your servant did to me after this manner," that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And there he was in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were with him in prison, and whatever they did there, it was his doing. And the keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. I want you to notice that in that reading, in verses 7 to verse 23, that there are three things that are talked about in that context, and I want you to notice that she seduced him. Secondly, I want you to notice that he resisted her. And thirdly, there were some results that followed. Those three things we want to focus on in our study tonight. I want to begin by describing before you that the temptation was strong. And I want the text to paint before you a picture of just how strong the temptation was. This was not a circumstance wherein Joseph was slightly tempted, and he was tempted, but just slightly so, and he could easily resist. The picture paints before us a concept that this was a strong temptation. The temptation was strong when I consider his youth, when I consider how young this man was. And I want you to notice with me that he had to be about the age of somewhere between 18 and 28 years of age. Because in chapter 32 and in verse 37 and in verse 2, he is introduced to us when he was 17 years of age. But we come a little bit later in chapter 41, if you will. And I want you to notice at verse 1, the text says, "It came to pass after the end of 2 full years, about when he was released from prison." And in verse 46, the text says he was 30 years old at that point. And so we take 2 off of that, that's 28. So somewhere about the age of somewhere between 18 and 28 years of age when this took place. And you get the picture of a young man somewhere between 18 and 28 years of age. This is a time when desires may have been at their strongest in their youth. The Apostle Paul would say in 2 Timothy 2 and in verse 22, to flee youthful lust. There is a period of time when perhaps those lusts may be greater than they would have been at other times. Perhaps this was a time when the desire would have been at its strongest. The same apostle would warn in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and in verse 9, it is better to marry than to burn with desire. And you look at the fact that indeed he was a young man. And you look at the age of the young man and how strong that temptation may have been. I learn a very practical thing that we need to take heed to, and that is that there are young people with faith and with principle. Quite often we're ready to mark off young people as a whole, as being those who don't have the faith and the courage and the strength that older people have. But here is an example of a young man who had faith and had principle. And some of our young people have faith and they have principle, and they have the courage to do the things that are right. This man was that kind of man too. But I want you to notice a second thing. The temptation was strong when I consider the fact that it was she that solicited him, not he seducing her. Quite often it's the young man trying to seduce the young woman, but that wasn't the case here. It was she that was soliciting him. I want you to notice with me at verse 7, the text says, she cast longing eyes at Joseph. She cast longing eyes at Joseph. The New American Standard translates that, she looked with desire at Joseph. She's making eyes at Joseph. The Living Bible paraphrase said, she began making eyes at Joseph. Well, the proverb writer had warned us, and keep in mind, Proverbs chapters 5, 6, and 7, those three chapters go together as a unit of chapters that talk about how the harlot works to seduce the man. We'll talk about that several times tonight. But in chapter 6 and in verse 25, tells us she can flirt with her eyes. Do not let her allure you with her eyelids. She can say more with her eyes than she can with her tongue. And she's casting longing eyes. And you keep in mind the fact, look at how young he was. She's flirting at him with her eyes. Or as some have suggested, that may mean that as she cast longing eyes, she made him a target. That is, she set her eye on him to target him. I'm going to seduce him and I'll do everything it takes to break him down. Whatever the case was, she was soliciting him. But I want you to notice a third thing. The temptation was strong when I realized that she told him how far she was willing to go. When I realized she told him how far she was willing to go. She is not toying and flirting only to turn out to be a tease. She's not saying to Joseph that here's what I want to do, and then when he begins to think, well, maybe she's real. Oh, no, I'm just teasing about that. I'm not serious about that at all. Here's what she said. Are you reading with me at verse 7? She said, come lie with me. Here's how far I'm willing to go. And I want to tell you, there are very few young men in Egypt that could have resisted that. The young men of the same age of Joseph realizes that she is the one that is seducing him. And then she says, here's how far I'm willing to go with you. The temptation was strong. I'm trying to paint before you the picture I see in this text, that indeed the temptation was really strong. But that's not all. I want you to consider this. The temptation was strong when I realized the repetition of it. When I recognized that she began to seduce him time and time again. Now, resistance in the first instance is not too hard. Eve did, didn't she, at first? Didn't she say, no, I'm not to eat of that fruit? God had told us in the day that we eat of it, we'd surely die. But she finally caved after a time. And you remember how that Samson resisted Delilah, and he resisted her again, and he resisted her again, but then he finally caved in Judges 16. What I'm trying to describe to you is that resistance at first is not too hard. It might not be too hard even for nearly any young man to say, no, I'm not interested in that. I'm not willing to do what you're asking me to do. But I want you to notice at verse 10, this was something continual and it was daily. And so it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed to her, to lie with her or to be with her. This was something that went on day by day. And you consider how young he was. And you consider she's the one seducing him. And she says, here's how far I'm willing to go. And she tells him day after day after day. Oh, the temptation was strong. And I want you to notice from Proverbs 6, I said we'd look at that time and again. Look at Proverbs 6 and in verse 26. From Satan's point of view, the design of this continual working on him and the continual making eyes at him and the continual flirting is all designed to wear him down. Look at Proverbs 6 and in verse 26. For by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread. That as she is trying to break him down, the resistance that may be there, she's breaking and she's crumbling and she finally reduces him like a crust of bread. And he succumbs to her temptation. From Satan's point of view, it's designed to wear him down. But that's not all. I want you to notice something else. The temptation was strong. And I know it was strong when I recognized what a convenient opportunity that he had. What do we mean by convenient opportunity? Well, the fact that one could easily be caught will often serve as a deterrent to the sin, doesn't it? A thief that is thinking about stealing would look around and he sees a camera is going to catch him or there are witnesses standing here watching, makes him decide, I think I'll do that another time. It's a deterrent to sin. And even in the sin of fornication, if others are standing there that are going to see you're about to succumb to the temptation, that might serve as a deterrent. But that wasn't the case here. The master is gone. Did you notice that at verse 11? Go back to our text if you've left it. Go back to Genesis 39 and verse 11. It happened about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his work and none of the men of the house was inside. The master is gone. No one else is around. The temptation is greater. Let's go back to Proverbs again and notice in chapter 7. As I've already mentioned, Proverbs chapters 5, 6, and 7 go together and warn about the harlot, not only saying don't let the harlot cause you to yield, but here is the tools that she uses to cause you to yield. Look at Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 19. As she comes out to this young man and says, you're the only one for me. verse 15. Here's what she says to him, verse 19. For my husband is not at home, and he's gone on a long journey. And he took a bag of money with him, and he'll come home on an appointed day. She comes out and she says to him, we won't get caught. Well, how you know we won't get caught? My husband won't catch us. How you know he won't come in? Well, he went on a journey. No, they'll probably come back. Oh, no, he's not coming back. He took a bag of money with him. He took his traveler's checks with him. He's gone for a while. He's not coming back for a while. And he said he'd come home at an appointed. He said he'd be gone for a week. 10 days and he'll be back. And so we've got all the time and we'll never get caught. And that's how she's trying to seduce him. We have a convenient opportunity. None of the men of the house was inside, the text says. I want to tell you something I learned from that. There is a danger, friend, of being alone with the opposite sex when no one else is around. Did you get the point? There is danger of being alone with the opposite sex when no one else is around. The temptation becomes stronger when there's no one else around. When you're in that parked car for a long time. When you're in that house or that apartment and no one else is around, the temptation becomes greater because now you have the convenient opportunity. Oh, I'm trying to paint before you a picture of how strong the temptation was with reference to Joseph. Oh, the temptation was strong. When you consider how young he was and you consider the fact that she was the one soliciting him and she said, here's how far I'm willing to go. And she did this over and over and over. And now there's a convenient opportunity. No one else is around. And now the temptation is strong. But equal to the strength of the temptation, I want to suggest to you the resistance was firm. Joseph resisted her, the text said. But I want you to notice how he did that. First of all, he resisted with words. Verses 8 and 9, and there are five things he said. I want you to notice the five things he said. Number one, he said, no, I'm not going to do that. Notice it, verse 8. Look at verse 8. The text says, but he, and you might underline in your Bible, refused. I mean, he said, no, I'm not going to do it. She comes to him and she said, come lie with me. And he said, no. And then the next day she says to him, come lie with me. And he refused. He said, no. Look at verse 12. Look at verse 12. The text says in verse 12 that she caught him by the garment and said, lie with me. But he left his garment and he fled and he ran outside. Verse 10 said, and so it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her. He said, no. And he meant no. Several years ago, when Nancy Reagan was first lady, she had a campaign against drugs, and her slogan for her campaign was, just say no. And she was heavily criticized because you don't just do that with drugs. You don't just say no. And I've often wondered, what was wrong with saying no to drugs? What's wrong with saying no to any sin? You say no to drugs, you say no to drinking, you say no to fornication, you say no to lying, you say no to dancing. Just say no. That's what Joseph did. He resisted with words. He said no, but that's not all he said. Look at verse 8. He resisted by words by speaking of trust. Look at verse 8. He refused and he said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house and has committed all that he has into my hand. You see, my master, your husband, trusts me. And he put everything he had into my hands to entrust me to handle things properly, and I'm not going to betray the trust. Listen to me, young people. Your parents trust you to behave yourself when you're on a date. They trust you to do the right thing. They trust you to say no. They trust you to resist. Don't betray the trust. Listen to me, husbands. Your wives trust you to do the right thing when she's not around. Listen to me, wives. Your husbands trust you to do the right thing when they're not around. He said, someone, trust me. I'm not going to betray the trust. Thirdly, he recalled the sacredness of marriage. Look at verse 9. There is no one greater in the house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. In other words, my master said I could have anything I wanted. And he hadn't kept back anything from me except one thing, and that was you, and that's because you're his wife. He recalled the sacredness of marriage. You're a married woman. No, I'm not going to do this. I told you no. My master trusts me, number two. And number three, there is something about the sacredness of marriage that I don't want to betray. But he's not through. Fourth, he said this. He recalled this was wickedness. It's evil. It's immoral. He said, are you reading with me now at verse 9? How can I do this great wickedness? He said, this is a wicked act. This is immoral. This is evil. No, I'm not going to do it. But he's not through. Here's the fifth thing he said. He said, it is a sin against God. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? When the sin of fornication or adultery is committed, it is not just the fact that one is a married person. It is not just the fact that they're breaking the marriage vows. It is not just that they've gone against their vows. It's not just that they're unfaithful to their mates. They are sinning against God. Quite often someone has an affair and we're rightly upset about the fact they violated their marriage vows. How could they do that against their mate? That's not the worst of it. They have sinned against their God. That's what's wrong with it. And I want you to notice what Joseph said. He's resisting. Oh, the resistance was firm. Remember how strong the temptation was? The resistance was equal in firmness because he resisted with words. And he said, no, my master, trust me. You're a married woman. This would be immoral and it is a sin against God. I cannot do that. But he's not through. Not only did he resist with words, he resisted with deeds. Verses 10 and 11. He put his money where his mouth was. He didn't say, no, I don't guess I ought to do that. And then kind of act like he really wanted to do that. But his actions matched his words. There are two things I want you to notice here. He refused to be with her. Have you noticed this at verse 10? And so it was that he spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her. Now notice the next phrase, or to be with her. I want to tell you, I missed that phrase for a long, long time in reading this text. I got the part about he refused to lie with her, but the text says, or to be with her. He refused to be with her. The New International translates that, or even to be with her. The Living Bible said he kept out of her way as much as possible. He sought to avoid her. He understood a principle. And the principle he understood is he understood the danger of association. He recognized that if you hang around and continue to hang around, I could easily be led into the sin. And so as day by day, as he would may have contact with her, and she would say, come lie with me, he tried to stay away from her as much as he could. Let's go back to Proverbs 5. Proverbs 5 and in verse 8 warns the young man of how to stay away from the harlot. He said, do not go near the door of her house. Don't even get close. If she is a temptation, avoid her. Don't go near her house. Don't go near her cubicle. Don't go near her desk. Don't go near her work area. Don't talk to her. Don't text her. Don't call her. Do not go near the door of her house. He resisted with deeds. He tried to stay out of her way as much as possible. But that's not all. I want you to notice at verse 12 that he fled and he ran outside. Have you noticed that at verse 12? That she caught him by the garment saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and he fled and he ran outside. Literally so. That's not some kind of figurative language where in his mind he was like he was running outside. He literally got up and he fled and he ran outside. He's refusing to be with her. He removed himself from the temptation. His action showed that his words were real. When he said no, he meant no. And when he said, I do not want to commit this immorality and sin against God, he meant he didn't want to commit that sin. And I want to tell you something. Whether it's young, old, or middle-aged, there may be a time that you have to leave. You may have to leave the house, you may have to leave the car or the room, and you may literally have to run and go somewhere else. Literally, you may have to do that. You may have to get out of the car, grab your cell phone and you may have to run and call for someone to come and get you. Wouldn't that be less embarrassing than to say, I have committed a sin against my God? You may have to get out of that apartment. You may have to get out of that house. You may have to run out of the room and say, no, I'm not going to do this, and run outside. Joseph resisted with words. Remember the five things he said? And not only did he resist with words, but he resisted with deeds. But I want to tell you something else. He resisted promptly. Remember back at verse 8, he refused. In verse 12, he fled and he ran outside, suggested he resisted promptly without the slightest hesitation, without any dallying around to see what the temptation may come to, no wanting to see how far this may go. Joseph did not say, no, I don't think we should do that. And then secretly in his mind thinking, you know, I wonder if she's really real about this. I just want to see if she'll really go that far. We'll stop before it gets too far, but I want to see what she's going to do. He resisted promptly. And I want to suggest to you that he resisted firmly. There was no wavering. There was no indecision. There was no pushing aside something that he secretly wanted to do. He said no, and he meant no. Oh, I'm here to tell you tonight, the temptation was strong. And equal to that, the resistance was firm. How did he resist? He resisted with words. Remember the five things he said? He said, no. My master, trust me. You're a married woman. This would be wickedness and immoral. It's a sin against God. And then he resisted with deeds. He refused to even associate with her. And then he fled and he ran outside. And he resisted promptly and firmly. The temptation was strong. The resistance was firm. But I want to also tell you the results were clear. When Joseph fled and he ran outside, verse 12. And now that he's on the outside, he can look back and he can see with greater clarity three things that he may not have ever seen before. Now perhaps these three things he could have seen, but not with the clarity he sees at this moment. And I want to tell you something he saw and he understands now. If he's never understood it before, he sees it now. The results are clear. Joseph is now on the outside and he can look back and he can see the difference between love and lust. I don't know if Joseph fully understood that before. He may very well have understood it, but I know he clearly sees it now. He can see the difference between love and lust. This woman lusted for him, but she did not love him. And you say, how do you know? Here's the evidence. Begin at verse 14 with me, if you will. You remember how she lied about what he had done in her effort to destroy him? Verse 14, she called them into the house and she spoke to them this way, saying, this man that, see, he has brought this to us, this Hebrew, to mock us, and he came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. You know what she's saying? That Hebrew my husband brought here, he tried to rape me. That's what she's saying. He come in and he tried to cry out to me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And if I hadn't screamed and hollered, he'd have got away with the crime. But lucky to me, y'all heard that. It happened that when he heard my voice, I lifted up my voice and I cried, that he left his garment and he fled and he went outside. He ran for his life when I began screaming and hollering. He was trying to rape me, is what he was trying to do. And she's not through. When her husband comes home, she spoke to him words like this, and she said, that Hebrew servant whom you brought in came in to try to mock me. He tried to rape me. He tried to do something to me. And I lifted up my voice and I cried out, and he left his garment and he fled and he went outside. Oh, if I hadn't screamed and hollered, he'd have got away with the crime. She's lying through her teeth. She doesn't care one thing about Joseph. But at the same time, she's saying, come lie with me. And that lust is now turned into hatred toward Joseph. Pulpit observed at this point, but indeed all illicit passion, whether gratified or balked, has a tendency sooner or later to be transformed into hate. I say amen. You think about that. All illicit passion, whether gratified or balked, has a tendency sooner or later to be transformed into hate. And I'm here to tell you tonight that one who lusts after you does not necessarily love you. Young ladies, when that young man says to you, I love you, I wouldn't do this with anybody else, and you'll do this with me if you love me, he is lying through his teeth. Lust seeks gratification. Love cares about the person. Love has respect for the person and their feelings and what they wish and what they don't want to do and their morality. If Joseph never saw it before, he now sees the difference between love and lust. He now understands, she doesn't love me. She doesn't care a thing about me. All she did was have lust for me. Don't learn that lesson too late. When you realize some young man or some young woman is lusting after you, but they don't really care about you at all. But here's another thing Joseph can see. He can look back and see with greater clarity what he lost. We all are familiar with this story enough to notice at verse 12 that when he fled and ran outside, he left his garment in his hand. He lost his coat. Now that he's on the outside, he can look back and he can say, you know what, I left some things in there. That's not the only thing he left. He left his garment inside. I'll tell you something else he left inside. He left his job in there. Because as soon as she begins to lie about him, his job is taken away, according to verse 20. Joseph is now on the outside. And he can look back and he say, I left my coat and I left my job over there. My job's gone. It's not all he left. He left his freedom. Verse 20 said, as soon as the husband found out about it, he was enraged and cast him into prison. Remember that, verse 20? He left his freedom on the inside. Now that Joseph is on the outside, he recognizes, you know what else? I've lost my standing and approval among men. Evidence? She's ran and told all the men of the house, he tried to rape me. She goes and tells Potiphar, he tried to rape me. He's lost his standing and his approval of men. I want to tell you, young people, when you resist with the firmness with which Joseph resisted, you may lose some things. And you may get on the outside and realize, you know what? Because I resisted, I've lost my boyfriend. I've lost my girlfriend. I've lost my standing among friends who ridicule me because I don't do what everybody else is doing. And they may tease you and they may mock you and they may ridicule you because you're the only one that's trying to live so pure. You've not done this. Everybody else has. That boyfriend may dump you. That girlfriend may never have anything to do with you again. Joseph lost some things. And you may lose some things when you stand for purity. But I want to tell you something else. Joseph gets out on the outside and he looks back and he sees a third thing with greater clarity than he's ever seen before. And that's what he kept. He brought some things out. Do you realize that when he came outside, he brought some stuff with him? We always focus on that garment he left inside. That wasn't worth a whole lot compared to the things he brought out with him. Do you realize that when he came outside, when he fled and he ran outside, that he brought his purity out with him? He brought his purity with him. He could have left it inside. But when he came outside, he brought his purity with him, didn't he? That's why we're talking about him tonight. And when Joseph fled and he ran outside, he brought his honor with him. The proverb writer warned about the man who would succumb to the temptation of the harlot. Wounds and dishonor will he get. Joseph brought his honor with him. There's something else he brought with him. He brought his conscience out with him. He could have left a clear conscience inside. But now that he's standing on the outside, he has a clear conscience that I did the right thing. Remember David when he committed the sin with Bathsheba? Even after forgiveness, he said, my sin is ever before me. Psalm 51 in verse 3. We decided Proverbs 6. Wounds and dishonor will he get. Joseph is not wrestling with his conscience about how could I have done that? Why did I do that? What was I thinking? He brought his conscience out with him. I'll tell you something else he brought out with him. He kept his reputation among the godly. Now, he may have lost his reputation among the men of the world. But he kept his reputation among the godly. You want evidence of that? We're talking about him tonight, aren't we? We're holding him up as a great example for us to follow, aren't we? There's your evidence he has reputation among the godly. And I tell you something else he brought outside with him. He kept his relationship with his God. Let me give you evidence of that beginning at verse 21 now, of Genesis 39. The Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed all into Joseph's hands. And all the prisoners who were in the prison, whatever they did, it was his doing. And the keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hands, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper. And what I learned from that is that he kept his relationship with God. Joseph gets on the outside and he can look back and he said, you know what, I brought far more with me than I left. I may have left my job and my freedom, my reputation among those men of the house, and not the coat. But I'm sure glad I brought my purity and my honor and my conscience, my reputation among the godly, and most importantly, my relationship with God. When Joseph gets outside, the results were clear. And he now sees the difference between love and lust. And he sees what he lost. And he sees what he kept. The temptation was strong. The resistance was firm. And the results were clear. I want to tell you that when I first started preaching a number of years ago, I used to think, what good does it do to preach on something like fornication or stealing or drunkenness to a crowd of Christians? Because they all know it's wrong. And so I'm not informing anybody of anything new. And I soon learned it does a lot of good to preach on those sins. It does a lot of good. A number of years ago, I read this in one of the newspapers published among brethren. It was one of the, among institutional folks. And I've since lost the article and don't know where to put my hands on it. But anyway, there was a survey made a number of years ago among the colleges and institutions across the land. All across the land, the colleges and institutions. And I don't remember what the numbers were, but the percentage of the students in those colleges that committed fornication was considerably high. So some of these, and I put in quotations, brethren, decided that they wanted to do a similar survey among the colleges among Churches of Christ, as they would call it. Places like Lipscomb and Harding and Freed Hardeman, Oklahoma Christian and other places. And they found the numbers of those students committing fornication was considerably less. And part of the survey was, why did they not commit the sin of fornication? And there were a number of reasons why. Some said they were afraid of pregnancy, so therefore they avoided it. Others said they were afraid of venereal disease, so they avoided it. Others said the peer pressure was different than in the other institutions and colleges. And some said it was their parents who instilled this from their youth. And others said it was Bible class teachers who dealt with it and taught them about the subject. The number one answer was surprising to me. Number one answer: pulpit preaching and teaching on the subject. And so nearly everywhere I go, I preach a lesson on fornication or adultery or something along that line. And it may be 10 years from now, it may be 20 years from now, and somebody may not remember that preacher's name, but he was some old preacher from Tennessee. I don't know what his name was, but I remember him saying something about Joseph. And if they can recall that principle and it causes them not to commit the sin of fornication, our time has been well spent here tonight. If we spare one soul, our time has been well spent. And that's why I preach on the subject here, other places, and we need to keep preaching on the subject because it does do its good. There may be one or more present tonight who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and sing?